This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's a jittery time for network television. After lots of deliberation and hair-pulling, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, and the newly formed CW Network have finalized their fall lineups. This week, they present their schedules to advertisers in a series of week-long events in New York called the Upfronts. The networks pulled out all the stops to attract the all-important ad money, which means lots of bells and whistles, celebrity appearances and performances and presentations by network biggies. Competition for ad dollars has become increasingly intense as the networks lose viewers to cable and to the internet. To catch up with changes in technology, more content is being offered online and for MP3 players, including original content like webisodes. Nielsen, the company that tries to keep track of how many eyeballs are on which outlet, is struggling to keep up too, but the networks and the advertisers still have yet to figure out the best way to reach audiences and to count them. In a few minutes, we'll talk with two TV critics who've been at the upfronts about the fall ski season and about the event itself. Later on, another visit from our political junkie. If you have questions about the dramatic testimony yesterday about Alberto Gonzalez, about last night's Republican debate, or the pre-9/11 Rudy Giuliani, you can send us emails now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, the upfront. What shows are you excited about? Which shows got axed that you'll miss? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now from NPR's Bureau in New York are Virginia Heffernan, a TV critic for The New York Times, and Troy Patterson, her counterpart at the online magazine Slate. And thanks to you both for being here.
Hi there.
Howdy.
And Virginia Heffernan, let's begin with you. How important are the upfronts?
Well, you know, every year they say that they're increasingly an anachronism. I mean, they're essentially a trade show that they the kind of thing that that people have in all kinds of other fields. But they selling shows live to advertisers in this, you know, in a time where you could easily see these previews mm-hmm. either online or on DVD, would seem to be less important now than it was, you know, say 20 years ago. But you wouldn't know it to see the frenzy around these presentations. Every year, as I say, people say they're not important and they're obsolete mm-hmm. and they're a rehash. And every year it becomes more and more difficult to get into these things and there's more and more excitement around them. I mean, you know, the average age of people going into these things is 35 or 40. And it's like seeing people, you know, waiting for an Aerosmith concert or something. I mean, they're so excited to catch a glimpse of, you know, Steve Carell from The Office or, you know, one of the women from Desperate Housewives. There's a kind of childlike energy around mm-hmm. That reminds, I think, everyone of, I don't know, how exciting it used to be to see the new television shows in the fall season. And as skeptical as we all try to act, that's people in the media and the advertisers and the executives, there's a kind of giddiness about the upfronts that people can't quite suppress.
Troy Patterson, you described people going in to save seats for each other like it was a high school gym.
Yeah, I think that partly has to do with the character of the ad guys. And I want to be clear to listeners that when we talk about ad buyers and ad guys, we're not talking about creative people who make funny ads. We're talking about sort of people who go to expense account lunches and deal with spreadsheets and crunch numbers and have meetings. There's sort of frat guys and sorority chicks who make sort of decisions. They'll tell, you know, the Acme company how mm-hmm. to put together its media plan and how much time on which shows they should be buying.
Oh, so if you want men ages 24 to 36 who like this kind of stuff, here's the show to buy.
Right, precisely. Uh-huh. And as I said, so it's sort of a frattish lot, and they're territorial. It would be a good anthropology project for an enterprising master's student.
And is that really, Virginia, those guys and those women, is that the audience? They're people being pitched?
Every now and then the executives on stage and one of the things that's very gratifying, I think, about the upfront presentations is seeing these Hollywood types, these really pretty high-placed executives make this very humbling bid for our approval. So for the fans' approval, for the media's approval, and for the approval of these buyers who are often based in Chicago or Austin, Texas, or New Jersey, and are not accustomed to having the head of programming for NBC come and try to hand sell him on what a riveting new drama is going to be on in the fall. There is a nice, not exactly every man, but a kind of a sort of a middle management quality to the guys there, and there are certainly lots of women now at the upfronts.
Sure.
Although we do use shorthand and say ad guys, because there you do see a lot of pinstripes in the room, and there's a kind of old fashioned quality. I saw a lot of scotch and soda being served at the upfronts, and there are a lot of jokes about how much drinking there is, and you do sit next to guys that in some cases have been coming for 30 years and remember the finale of MASH and the ratings that got, and they remember some advertising landmarks like the Folgers Maxwell House war
I was very fond of the last episode of MASH. Anyway, so it's
not to knock it.
The Hollywood bubble meets some form of reality, in other words.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And meets its audience and has to face not just the numbers and the ideas of demographics and all their guesses and sort of computer mind thinking about what audiences want. And they really have to look out at sort of, a certain slice of the American demographic and say, how does this work? And it's also where thing I really like about the upfronts is you get to hear the newest jargon about what Americans might like. I was especially touched this year by Kevin Riley, who's the head of programming at NBC, his use of the word special. All of a sudden, we have there's a certain kind of show that's a special show. I still don't know exactly what it means. Troy, did you have some? Is it Journeyman is the show that's one of NBC's new pilots he described, I think, as a special show.
A newspaper reporter who goes back in time through the time tunnel, perhaps, and influences people's lives in the past.
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand what that meant.
He was definitely trying to tell us something about the show.
There was some code there that has yet to be detected, decoded, perhaps.
Yeah.
The more I think about the show, and again, all of these impressions are based on having watched essentially trailers for the show, these 2 or 3 minute montages of bits from the pilot. Journeyman kind of looks like a Weepy for Dudes.
Yeah. Weepy for Dudes, I think, is what special means. Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Let's see if we get some callers in on this conversation. 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Floyd joins us now. Floyd calling from Milwaukee.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. And
sure.
Hello to your guests.
Hi.
Believe it or not, I don't know if I'm one to say. I haven't really, because of my schedule, get around to watching too much TV. But I am excited about, I want to know, are a lot more of the networks trying to reach out to maybe people that are into sci-fi or anything like that? Because when I do blogging, it seems they have some very strong audiences, but, a lot of them are on cable and what have you. And I've been quite intrigued by the show Lost, which I just started to see on CD or DVD.
That's a great observation. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, in fact, if there's one dominant trend emerging this pilot season, it is sort of a resurgence of sci-fi. So, sort of NBC in particular is feeling emboldened by the success of Heroes. It's Superman, superhero everyman show that's the breakout hit of last year. So their fall slate includes the remake of The Bionic Woman, something called Chuck, which is about sort of the schlub who works in retail who gets a lot of sensitive government secrets downloaded to his brain. Journeyman is this time travel show.
We have a clip from The Bionic Woman if Floyd wants to get a taste of what it sounds like.
Okay, Jamie, I need to tell you something.
What's happening, Trish?
I need to tell you about what I do, and you need to listen to me.
Careful,
listen to me, Jamie. Both your legs and your arm had to be replaced. Also, your right ear and right eye. Molecular machines, anthracites, have been substituted for 1/8 of your blood cells.
And she then screams and throws him across the room. It's fascascinating stuff.
Thank you. Thank you for that treat. That's very nice of you.
Okay. Yeah, anthracites, yeah. Little bits of coal in her blood? I don't get it. But anyway, okay. Thanks very much for the call, Lloyd.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
The caller also said something very significant. He said that he's gotten interested and lost from DVDs, not from watching it on the air, and also from reading blogs. One of the things we've been seeing at the upfronts is a real interest in secondary ways, basically, that viewers get interested in television shows, not just watching them on TV, but maybe watching them on DVD, but also interacting somehow with the characters and, as Kevin Riley says, the mythology of the shows mm-hmm. online. And sci-fi shows are really, really lend themselves to online engagement. Shows that ask, that you know, have a kind of forensic quality to them, leave clues around, like Heroes or Lost, really get viewers engaged online. And you know, anyone who's ever even dipped into the Losties sites or the Heroes, the fan sites, know that you know people will spend hours just parsing episodes or little bits of episodes online, and the networks are really trying to take advantage of that.
Yeah, but Troy, one of the arguments we're hearing, we just have a few seconds before the break, but our audience is much bigger than the Nielsen numbers show because people are watching it on TiVo or on DVR, yet the advertisers know if they're watching on TiVo and DVR, they're not watching the ads.
This is true, and yet I was struck yesterday at ABC's presentation. An executive, as part of his sales pitch, he contended that ABC audiences, families with money, quote unquote, mm-hmm. families with money, not only watch the commercials but engage with them,
even on video. There's an argument I find hard to accept. We'll talk more about it after we come back. We're talking about the TV upfronts this week and how networks pitch new shows to advertisers and ultimately to viewers. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is a busy week for the TV networks. They're parading their fall lineups in front of advertisers and reporters in New York, hoping to find a mega hit or two. We have links to some of the new shows at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guests are Virginia Heffernan, TV critic and blogger for The New York Times, Troy Patterson, TV critic for the online magazine Slate. Tell us what new shows you're excited about. What canceled shows are you going to miss? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can also comment or read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. For screenwriters and producers, the upfronts is a time when the dreams can come true or can be dashed. Carolyn Williams was among the lucky ones this year. ABC picked up her pilot about a former high school nerd who returns to her alma mater as a guidance counselor. It's called Misguided.
For many students, the guidance counselor is their only source of support. Sure, some have an easier time than others, but sooner or later, they all end up in my office.
I hate my life. Every day, my brother wakes me up in the morning by hitting me in the head with a jock strap.
Come on, Russell. It can't be as bad as you think.
I'm failing remedial PE. I left my inhaler on the bus, and I'm not positive, but I think I have head lice.
That was Judy Greer in the new ABC sitcom, Misguided. Carolyn Williams is the creator of that series. She joins us by phone from New York City. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And this must be a big deal for you. This is your first pilot.
This is my first pilot. It's actually my first year in the business at all, so it's pretty overwhelming.
When did you get the call?
I got the call late Sunday night. All last week there were phone calls back and forth that it was going to go, and then it wasn't, and it was, and it wasn't. So it was a relief to finally hear just anything.
So your first year in the business, and you've been introduced to Malox.
Yes, exactly.
What was it like at the upfronts for you when hundreds of network bigwigs and the advertisers, I assume, parading you around to meet the people who are going to sponsor your program?
Well, exactly. Actually, we didn't meet a lot of the advertisers themselves. A lot of the week that I've noticed that I've been here is just people doing business and getting the shows lined up and everyone trying to get their writers hired on different shows. And most of the time people are pretty drunk. It's kind of the celebratory as far as I can tell, but also very – everyone has a business agenda and wants to impress everyone. So
I assume you've spent much of the past year pitching your show to network people. It must be pretty strange to hear them pitch it to somebody else.
Yeah, actually, I wrote the show as a spec, and I never really had to sell it. And then now that I see the sales process going, I see the things that I focused on when I was trying to sell it were different than the things they're focusing on to the advertisers. Obviously, they want to make sure it's marketable, whereas I just want to make sure it's funny and it's, you know, what I initially wanted.
What was it like when you went into, I assume it's still called The Meeting?
Yeah. It was intimidating. It's me and, you know, a bunch of executives, and I just sort of had to tell them that I thought the show had legs, and I had thought of stories for where the characters could go, and I thought it was funny, and it was sort of based on my own life experience, and they really were excited to hear that, I guess. So it was pretty intimidating, but
most of our experience of that meeting is from watching Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Was it like that at all?
I guess the level of anxiety was similar between the people involved, so that was similar. I don't know about
you're channeling George all of a sudden. Yeah.
Exactly. In that scenario, I was George, yes.
Yeah. Carolyn Williams, good luck with the show. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Carolyn Williams, creator of the ABC pilot Misguided, which will air sometime in the winter of 2008. I don't know, Troy Patterson, did you get a chance to see any of that at all?
Misguided, I saw sort of 3 minutes of the show. Another sort of caveat I want to offer is that one cannot always sort of get a sense of how good a show is going to be, even from watching the full pilot, which is, you know, pilots are made as sort of sales pitches, and often they get sort of tinkered with on their road to becoming a regular series. But I saw a few minutes of Misguided, and it seemed charming. I have a fondness for the star, Judy Greer, who, as it happens, also appears in this current movie called The TV Set, which is a satire of the development process. She plays a rather callow agent.
That's a what bizarre casting. I mean, a callow agent, after all. Let's see if we get another listener on the line. This is Robert. Robert's calling us from Sacramento.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Now, good afternoon here, but go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple of comments, and then I'll take your responses off the air. I'm really disappointed with how the networks are not paying attention to a particular segment of the audience that isn't the 18 to 34-year-old group. And we, in terms of disposable income and how you might target us in terms of advertising, you're missing the boat.
I assume you're not talking about 10 to 17-year-olds.
Say what?
I assume you're not talking about 10 to 17-year-olds.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about people 55 and older.
Right.
But the show's canceled. My lady friend loves Studio 60 on Sunset Strip. So did a lot of her lady friends. And they used to watch it faithfully. They were very disappointed when it was taken off the air. I and she both liked Rains. It was shown on Friday night. It is not a night that we go out and party. In fact, we don't party. We Friday night is a night when we sit down and relax and perhaps mull over our week, but then we want to sit down and watch a show we like on television. And I certainly could see the kind of advertising tied to such a show, say the ED drugs, cruises, and so forth, things aimed at that segment of the population, 55 and older. I happen to like those kinds of shows, so does she, so do many of our friends, and as an educator.
Virginia Heffernan, is he talking about CBS here?
No, NBC canceled Rain.
Yes, but CBS is the network that seems to appeal to that demographic, isn't it?
Well, NBC's missing the boat.
Yeah, why don't we get an answer from Virginia? Go ahead, please.
The caller also mentioned something about disposable income, and when I hear about demographics, I think of something that that Les Moonves, who's the longtime programmer at CBS and now an executive, one of the heads of Viacom, said last year, which is as much as all the networks try to argue simultaneously that their audience is young and upscale, what he always says is there is no 18 to 34 upscale, by which he means there are no young rich people,
right,
really. Young people don't have money, and people who have money aren't young. and this is a really, I think, profound insight into advertising and basically a paradox about advertising, which is, you know, you think that you want a brand to appear young and cool, but, you know, a Lexus, for instance, can't appear too cool because it shouldn't alienate the people who can afford it.
Mm. Isn't the theory that you're going to get them associated with your brand as a teenager or as a young adult, and they'll use Old Spice for the rest of their life?
I think that Moonves's point was that that kind of brand loyalty and a lot of young marketers have pointed this out too. That kind of brand loyalty from the days of basically binary marketing, where you could choose between Folgers and Maxwell House or Old Spice, and I don't know what the alternative to Old Spice was, but Old Spice
Brute, I think.
Old Spice and nothing.
Yeah,
Brute, right? Was
High Karate.
High Karate was the choices are so legion now, and that kind of brand loyalty, you know, that you start using something, you get your Arrow shirts or your whatever at 16, and you never look back. Just that doesn't that no longer holds, or that wisdom is no longer relevant. But just to go back to the question, CBS has really. And this is a good segue into discussion of CBS. CBS has really made a point of saying, we don't really, really care about young people. We don't believe in that idea that, you know, about brand loyalty. We basically just want an upscale, which is you know, not very good code for rich audience. We want a rich, you know, well-heeled and older audience. We like senior audience. Senior audiences like procedurals. The CSI franchise has been incredibly successful with them. They like mysteries. They like, you know, things that they can solve, and they don't mind repeats. And and sometimes they're in on weekend nights.
And we don't have any clips from those shows because CBS has not rolled out its schedule yet.
That's right. We should point out we're halfway through the week of Upfront, so we're still all, you know, on the edge of our seats to find out. We've seen ABC and NBC's offerings. We're still on the edge of our seat to find out about CBS, Fox, and the CW. CBS's offerings this year do look a little different, and I think your caller's right to say that CBS in particular seems to look like it's skewing a little bit younger. I don't know about the 55 and older audience, but I have seen a lot of shows so far that look like they're aimed at sort of 45-year-olds. Didn't you notice that, Troy? Like, sort of, I don't know, midlife crisis age.
I did. ABC's kind of cornered the market on this sort of these foursomes, quartets of friends having midlife crises. There's one show called Cashmere Mafia, created by Darren Star of Sex and the City fame, that's about four high-powered women in, New York City, probably, and their difficulties in life and love and with the glass ceiling. They would seem to be married, at least metaphorically, to the four dudes, CEOs on the show called Big Shots, and they sit around the country club and talk about their romantic difficulties and how their wives are more powerful than they are.
Desperate house husbands?
Yes, precisely, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
the 40-year-olds are getting coddled. I think that older audiences are increasingly going to find themselves better served by cable networks. Yeah. TV Land in particular is sort of making some innovative efforts to do new things for a baby boomer audience. Hmm. And I think that that's the one thing. What I would be most excited to see this Upfronts week is a show that looks like a blockbuster, something like sort of MASH or Dallas that sort of everyone can love. Right now, what we have, what the mass audience has, is American Idol, which is American Idol. And I think that's really one of the beautiful things that network TV can do is sort of, offer up these institutions for a truly mass audience. And that's not happening.
ABC did offer a pilot of a game show that they think could be the next mega hit.
A new game will have America screaming one thing.
National Bingo Night?
Yeah. That was that played a pretty big part in the song and dance at the Upfronts. They are putting a big bingo show on, and I think putting a lot of stock in it being not quite the next American Idol, but ideally for them the next Deal or No Deal, mm-hmm. which has been a pretty big hit for NBC.
And these don't cost a lot to produce, I don't think.
No.
It's only the prize money, which is you know, an insurance question, mm-hmm. essentially. You know, some shows cost almost nothing to make, and then all of a sudden you get a show that costs $1 million to make.
That week, yeah.
Week. And, you know, I was exhausted. I don't know about you, Troy, but I was exhausted at that Upfront yesterday. It was so cold in Lincoln Center, and I've sort of left bored by most of the presentation. And when they announced they were going to do bingo, I couldn't remember the last time I played bingo. I almost couldn't remember how to play bingo. And the kind of slightly unctuous host, you know, had his minions distribute the little bingo cards. And he was already trying to hype it. And I was ready. And I've been live blogging the Upfronts for the New York Times. And I was already ready to write something snarky about how horrible and boring bingo is and how terrible it was. And I, in spite of myself, found my heart pounding faster at the prospect of getting bingo and winning a 70-inch plasma television, which was what was on offer yesterday.
Meanwhile, yesterday, the late-night comedian Jimmy Kimmel did a brief stand-up act as part of the Upfronts. He suggested that bingo was going to be for viewers who were put off by the complexity of Deal or No Deal.
Fifth graders, perhaps. We're talking with Virginia Heffernan of The New York Times, Troy Patterson of the online magazine Slate. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Bruce on the line. Bruce is with us from Grand Junction in Colorado.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You had mentioned earlier about TiVo watchers skipping through commercials. I pretty much watch all my viewing on recorded shows, but I don't fast forward strictly through the commercials. What I'll do is I'll slowly fast forward until I find one that catches my interest. If I'm seeing the same old fast food commercial or soft drink commercial, I have no interest.
Did you ever stop, by the way, at the Geico ad with the cavemen?
You know, I've watched them like once or twice because they catch my attention, and then I'll start skipping them again.
Well, this year you can watch them in their own half-hour sitcom.
Thank you, Jamie, for dressing up. I appreciate the effort.
Well, I was going to wear this regardless.
Yeah, I always wonder what Reba McEntire would look like if she was a Cro-Magger.
Please don't use that word.
It's okay if we use it.
It's not okay. You can't change a negative stereotype if you're out there reinforcing it.
Magnum P.I., Magpie, Sir Magalot, Macaroni and Cheese.
No, keep them coming.
Jerry Maguire.
Ooh, Toby Maguire.
Okay, fine.
So now we have Troy Patterson commercials evolving into television shows.
That sounds like the natural next thing. none of us should be surprised. I don't know at all what to make of the Cavemen show. It seems to be this very wacky effort to sort of address issues relating to sort of assimilation and class in America. The question is, like, would you let a caveman in your country club? How would you feel if your daughter wanted to marry a caveman? I wasn't watching the show in the main auditorium. I was watching a closed circuit broadcast in a room with a few dozen other journalists who had been sort of like chatting with their partners and laughing and talking throughout. And then when the caveman preview came on, we were dumbstruck. We were just, you know, this is not necessarily a negative judgment, but it looked sort of
got your attention. That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Virginia, let's get back to Bruce's point about you and many more Americans, Bruce, only watch commercials when they grab your attention, which I guess is changing commercials, but it's also changing television, isn't it, Virginia?
People use their TiVos and DVRs, and I'm sure that most of the audience knows what these things are. But you know, they're devices that work with your cable box to allow you to record shows and then watch them later at your leisure. And also not just choose what time to watch them, but choose how to watch them. What scenes you want to watch and what scenes you want to fast forward over, and what commercials you want to watch and what commercials you want to fast forward over. What I love about DVRs is that they really allow you to curate your experience of television. So I have a colleague at the New York Times, Andrew Sorkin, who he likes television, but he's one of those, you know, supreme multitaskers, and he's able to compress a huge amount of television into an hour a day. I mean, I think he watches everything on all the channels, but he manages just to fast forward over every reality show, but he just watches the end, the elimination, you know, and the news and so on very quickly. So that's one thing, one way that they've been used. And as your caller said...
And we're going to have to leave it there because I'm afraid we're out of time. Bruce, thanks very much for the call. Troy Patterson of Slate Magazine and Virginia Heffernan of The New York Times, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And when we come back, Ken Rudin joins us for our weekly visit with the political junkie. This is NPR News.